This is the third time we've tried to start recording this. The first time around, I just could not fucking talk at all. Just no talking skills happening whatsoever. And the second time, we started recording, and there's this nice quiet moment there between the sighing and the intro music, and I ripped a nice big fart. Oh, God. Farting's not funny. Well, actually, it is. That's immature. Okay, it's still funny. Don't forget, the ever-present, the most likely, the third possibility, fart jokes are funny. Fart jokes are funny. No, they're funny. They're fucking funny. Shut up. Oh, hi, I'm the great one himself, founder of Cynical Libertarian Society. Still, that's me, 12 years of podcasting. This is Stating the Obvious Podcast. It is the weapons platform from which I launch the cruise missile my intellect homes in and destroy stupid motherfucking statist. All over the world, it does not matter what kind of statist you are. You can be a GLBTKKK statist, you can be a tranny statist, a homo statist, a left-wing statist, a right-wing statist, a statheist, you could be a cyber statist, you can be an anarcho-sissy, an anarcho-communist, you can be whatever the fuck you want to be. Here's the thing. If you don't have exactly the same opinions about everything I do that I do, then you're fucking wrong and you're an idiot. Why? Because I've fucking proven that to be true. You know how I've proven that shit to be true? Because I believe it. So there it is. Fuck you. Alright. Today is still the 5th? Yeah, February the 5th. I think it's Super Bowl Sunday. So we recorded two episodes this morning, then we left the studio because I had to go get some sunshine and fresh air and shit like that. And, oh my God, they're fucking, I went by the grocery store because I was like, eh, you know, I want to get some food. I'd got some shit at the house and everything. But I wasn't feeling it. I'm like, well, you know what the fuck I wanted. So I wandered around downtown a little bit and went by the pinball place, played a little pinball, wandered around some more in the fresh air and the sunshine, went to the grocery store. Oh my God, it was fucking filled with people in there in their fucking football clothes. And like, people, just go watch your football game and get the fuck, it's like, go watch football and get out of the grocery store because I want to goddamn buy some shit. I don't want to fucking put up with people all around me fucking holding me up trying to pay for fucking three items of the goddamn credit card. What the fuck is wrong with you people that buy three dude, I mean, people buy one thing and pay for it with a fucking credit card. Do you people not understand the concept? There needs to be a line at the grocery store, cash only. You have your credit card, and it's going to take you an hour to figure out how the chip works, and you're going to punch your fucking code in wrong the first three times. Just go somewhere else. Anyhow, bitch. That's all I ever fucking do. I sound like a goddamn woman. So anyhow, now I'm sitting here. I got my hot tea. It's some mint tea. It's pretty delicious. I got my feet propped up. I'm sitting down because I'm tired from all the walking around I did today. We're going to get back into The Internet Is Not the Answer by Andrew Keen. I looked. Apparently, I did not do book discussion episodes about his other two books, which I have read, Digital Vertigo and The Cult of the Amateur. I thought for sure. I wasn't sure about Cult of the Amateur, but I thought for sure I had done some discussion about Digital Vertigo. Apparently, I did not. Maybe I intended to, and, you know, like many things, I was like, oh, I'm going to do this, and then it never actually happened, which is completely possible. So before we delve into that, I'm going to try to remember to put this in the show notes. Over at Age of Shitlords, they just put out a post very recently, about Twitter shadow banning people's tweets. talked about that a little bit in the past. I've noticed that some of my tweets, in fact, are not visible on Twitter. So when Twitter is censoring me and I'm a nobody, you know we're in trouble. And according to Age of Shitlords, it's done by bots and it probably keys off of certain words in the titles. And since a lot of the titles I have on the episode are pretty deliberately offensive because I really enjoy hurting your feelings because I don't give a fuck about your feelings. It's not my job to manage your emotions. That might explain why my tweets aren't visible on Twitter, but it's fine. I mean, I'm over it. I don't care that much. It's just not that big of a deal. What's going on here? Verification. Okay, I got to click a couple buttons on the computer. Hang on, because we were doing some computer backups and shit like that. All right, that's good. I was going to tangent about something. Oh, sorry, let me tangent about this real quick. Then I'm going to tangent about something else. Then we're going to get back to the book. I'm going to try to keep the tangenting short. And Randy is prepared to red card me almost instantly. And no, don't just go to the red card now. Just hang on, Roman. God, you're so fucking impatient. All right, comic books. As you may or may not know, I do like reading comic books on occasion. Picked up some stuff at the library. First one is a manga, Japanese anime comic book. It's called War Angels. I didn't realize we were taking angels quite so literally. I got through about the first 40 pages, and it's this post-apocalypse America. There's monsters and demons running around, and this hot chick shows up in town, and then there's these two muscular guys who beat people up, one who's kind of goofy and obnoxious, and one who's really quiet and doesn't talk much. And the two guys are the angels, and the chick, it turns out, the hot, scantily clad, the hot, scantily clad girl, who looks like she's, you know, it's, again, it's a drawing. How old is she really? Well, she isn't any years old, it's a fucking drawing, but she looks like, you know, an 18, 19, 20-year-old girl. She's actually a nun, because all nuns look this fucking hot, right? And she's the one who's in charge of these two men. So, you know, she's been sent forth by and it's actually, you know, she's a nun. It has really all these religious overtones, and everyone's talking about, oh, God, save us and shit. And I'm going, ah, God damn it. Can I just read a comic book about monsters getting killed without having to have God in it? But then you say, I'm a real atheist, not a fake atheist. Anyhow, so God shows up, and it's like demons, and they're godding, and this chick is, she's a fucking, yeah, here she is, she's using this big giant machine gun and shit. Oh yeah, honey, you couldn't even pick that up. There's no way in hell. And your belt of ammo is hanging out all over the place. It's going to get dirty and it's going to jam. That shit in the movies where the ammo belt is like hanging out of the M60 machine gun and the guy's running around shooting it. First of all, that ammo belt, as short as it is going to be gone in almost no time. But second of all, you don't drag your ammunition through the dirt, because then the dirt goes up into the fucking chamber with the ammunition and the fucking machine gun jams. All right? Jesus Christ. But anyhow, the point I'm getting at is that she's in charge of these other two angels, and they're supposed to be going around fighting demons. Because it's like, right, when you're sending somebody out to be in charge of two angels who are going to fight demons, you would always send some little 19-year-old nun chick who has, not a nunchuck, but a nun chick, who has no life experience or, you know, worldly knowledge or anything like that. Because that's exactly who you put in charge of a combat operation, is a fucking 19-year-old girl who's lived her entire life in a fucking nunnery. Right, that's who you put in charge of a fucking combat team. And I get it, it's a comic book. And it's supposed to be written with, you know, big muscular guys and hot chicks so that people have sexual attraction. Here she is, like, tied up and shit, because I guess she's been captured, and ooh, she's wearing these Daisy Dukes and all this other shit. I get it, sex appeal, you're trying to sell a comic book, but god damn it, it's just ridiculous. Speaking of ridiculous, Captain Marvel, Earth's Mightiest Hero. I got the Captain Marvel, which has been rebooted. Captain Marvel is, of course, now a woman. Because, well, we just can't have any superheroes being men anymore, can we? And of course, it's not like we can invent new superheroes for the women, because that would involve creativity and shit. So we just take the old superheroes that were men, like Captain Marvel, and we'll turn Captain Marvel into a woman. And this fucking dialogue, okay, I made it maybe 15 pages into this one, and I couldn't take anymore. Listen to this dialogue. So Captain Marvel, this chick, she's under the ocean and some shit's going on. There's some sharks because, you know, whatever. And so she comes back up to the top and there's this boat there and there's this chick up on the boat. The other chick on the boat is, of course, a black woman, because in addition to all the characters being women, we also have to get in our fucking bunch of minorities and shit. And here's this fucking dialogue. Captain Marvel says, "Give me a break. You don't go by Captain Marvel. You haven't used it in years." And I don't know why Captain Marvel is calling the other bitch saying you. I don't know the fucking backstory and I don't care. Just roll with me. The dialogue is terrible. "Give me a break. You don't go by Captain Marvel. You haven't used it in years. It wasn't yours to begin with." That's some feminist empowering speech. "It wasn't yours to begin with." And is a sentence. It's "and" exclamation mark. "It wasn't yours to begin with, dot, dot, dot. And exclamation mark. You have like 15, I'm not making this up, guys. You have like 15 alternate code names anyway. Monica, Photon, Pulsar, Captain Marvel, Rambo." And so the black chick says, "I'm sorry, did I just hear that right? Am I being judged by Miss Captain Warbird Binary Marvel?" Now, I don't know what the Warbird Binary is referencing. Are we talking about gender binary? I don't know. I kind of care, but not really. Captain Marvel says, "Touché." In my entire life, one person has ever said "touché" to me. He was a philosophy major. Token black chick then says, "All I'm saying is, you should have called. It's like, you want to date my ex? Doesn't matter how long we've been broken up, he's still my ex. You call." Because this guy used to date her, so before Captain Marvel can date token black girl's ex, Captain Marvel needs to call token black girl and get permission to date token black girl's ex-boyfriend, because token black girl owns her ex-boyfriend. I'm not making this up. Captain Marvel says, "You're right. I'm sorry. I should have called." Token black girl says, "Damn straight. Nobody should find out something like that from a Google alert. It's uncivilized." Captain Marvel interrupts and says, "Wait, what?" Token black girl says, "You see any boats down there?" Meaning under the ocean, not between her legs. And Captain Marvel says, "I'm sorry. Did you just let slip that you have a Google alert set up on your code name?" Token black girl says, "No, I asked you if you saw any boats down there." Captain Marvel says, "You do. You Google yourself." And she starts clapping her hands. It little has a little clap, clap, clap sound effect. And then Captain Marvel says, "Monica." And token black girl says, "Carol." And then Captain Marvel says, "You stop with that code name nonsense, and I will not tell Tony Stark about your Google alerts." So she's going to not, if you stop with the code name nonsense, I will not tell Tony Stark about your Google alerts. And then Token Black Girl says, "You tell Tony, you might as well tell every," and Captain America interrupts and says, "That's right." And then Token Black Girl says, "You admit you should have called." And Captain Marvel says, "I should have called." And then Token Black Girl says, "Deal." Because you see, you know, if you could just create your own fucking new superheroes and just make them women, it'd be easier to remember names. Captain Marvel says, "Yeah, you know, we wouldn't want to embarrass you by, telling Tony Stark about you Googling yourself." Because of course, Tony Stark is an alpha male and all the women are fighting with each other to get his cock inside of them and get that alpha male sperm. Even though both these chicks are superheroes, the one place they're not, they still recognize the alpha male. They still want the alpha cock. And anyway, I'm almost done. I know, this is painful. So then, Captain Marvel. I keep wanting to say Captain America. Captain Marvel, because Captain America actually shows up later in here. And of course, you know, Captain Marvel is like, "Oh, he's so patronizing. He's mansplaining to me." I'm not making this up. So Captain Marvel says, "You know, I sure have missed you, Googler." And Token Black Girl says, "I missed you too, thief." So this is what comic books have become. Yeah. All right, we're done with that. The new rebooted Captain Marvel is a woman and terrible. There we go. That's going that way. Is there something? Oh! Okay, movies. None of this has to do with discussing the book. This is why it takes me forever to actually do the fucking book discussion. Because I always have other things I want to talk about. Let me see how fast I can make this. Night of the Living Dead. If you've seen it, you know that the lead character is played by a black actor. So it's a black guy. And one of the things that's always impressed me about that movie is that there wasn't any sort of fanfare in the movie about, oh, the fact that he's a black guy, right? You know, like normally, especially in that day and age when people were doing were using movies to push the social agenda, there'd always be someone who's like, "Well, I'm not taking orders from you, you're black," or whatever. You know, there'd be some kind of, the fact that he is a black person would come up in the dialogue, in the plot somewhere, and happen, that there would be something about this. And in Night of the Living Dead, the main character is a black guy, and he tells other people what to do, and all this other stuff, and none of those things happen. And I always thought, having watched the movie, it's like, okay, you know, it was good, the fact that they did it this way, and they had this black actor playing a black character, but they didn't make a big deal out of it. And that, to me, makes it much more effective than when you take the blackness of the actor, because nobody watching the movie has noticed he's black, right? You would just never notice that from looking at him, and shove it down your throat. So I'm watching a documentary about the making of Night of the Living Dead, and I found out why. I did not previously know this. When the script was written, there was no consideration put in as for what color any of the actors would be. So the part was not written as a black man. It was simply written as a man. And when the casting was done, for whatever reason, they cast in the role this black guy because they thought he was a great actor. So they gave him the part. And George Romero is saying in the documentary, he's like, you know, "We discussed, did we need to change anything? Because, you know, the script didn't factor any of this in. Did we need to change anything to reflect the fact that the actor playing the lead was now a black guy?" And we decided not to. And that is what makes it such a good movie from the race perspective, because the attention is never brought to, you know, because they're all in the house and everything, and there's different people in there, and there's disagreement. You know, should we go in the basement? Did we stay upstairs and board up the, you know, what do we do? And the black guy, and I'm just calling people the people because I don't remember the characters' names. But, you know, you got the black guy, and you got the white chick whose brother was killed, and then you got the guy and his wife and his daughter that had been hiding in the house, and they're downstairs, and he's sort of the main antagonist because his thing is he wants to go hide in the basement, but the black guy, the main protagonist, he's like, no, we don't want to hide in the basement because if we're in the basement and they get in, there's no place to go. We're trapped down there. Right. So there's this conflict between them, but at no point during the, there's a lot of conflict through the movie between the people who are hiding in the farmhouse trying to not be eaten by the zombies. But at no point does the conflict devolve into this shit about, well, I'm, you know, you're not going to tell me what to do. You're just, you're black. I'm not listening to you. That never happens. And I'm like, okay, that was well written. Well, now we know why. Because it was written without any regards to what color any of the actors were, and that just happened in the casting process. So then, I'm watching Dawn of the Dead, which is the second movie. That's the one that takes place in the shopping mall. And I hadn't seen the movie in a long time. I had forgotten about the opening sequences because I vaguely remember the parts in the shopping mall and sort of the things they did and all this other stuff. But there's this bit before where all the hell is breaking loose and two of the characters are SWAT officers. One of them is a black guy. One of them is a white guy. And you've got a white helicopter pilot and his white girlfriend. And in this one, the writers are very obviously trying to shove skin color down your throat. Even to the point where at the very beginning of the movie, there's this whole SWAT team going in to clear this building. I'm not really sure why they're clearing a building, but whatever. I mean, again, it's some of it feels a little contrived in the beginning, this whole SWAT team. Anyhow, you know, there's this one SWAT guy who's like yelling, yeah, let's go shoot the niggers. Let's go shoot the Puerto Ricans. I'm going to go shoot all them. You know, and it's just like, holy fuck. And I mean, Dawn of the Dead is still a good movie. It's still enjoyable to watch. It's just very over the top with the trying hard to be so anti-racist to the point that it's laughable, to the point that the anti-racism message gets lost in how laughably over the top it is. Which just goes to show that subtlety goes a long way. This is something I've been saying over and over for a long time. Because as you know, I'm a theater person, right? When people, you can have a political, social message in your entertainment, in your movie, in your theater, in your TV. But first, it's got to be entertaining. And then you can insert the message. And the message, subtlety is better. Okay. In Night of the Living Dead, where there was, now knowing this in retrospect, that the script was written just for a bunch of people, that skin color was never factored. I mean, the racial message is almost not even there. And yet, it is there. Because it's so subtle as to almost not exist. And that's what gives it the power. Whereas in Dawn of the Dead, Dawn of the Living Dead, where the writers very obviously said, okay, so our first movie turned out to have these racial overtones. Now we're going to drive it home. Now we're going to shove it down people's throats. It's just way too much. All right, speaking of way too much, we're 24 minutes in. I still haven't started talking about the book. Let's do it. Oh, man, that tea is good. Not pee, tea. I just have to be careful what I say to you people. You're a bunch of goddamn perverts. I don't know where you get that shit from. Couldn't possibly be from me. I am pure and virginal like the wind-driven snow. All right, we're on page 66, and we're going to talk about Facebook. I'm going to talk about Facebook. You're going to listen. Where Facebook... Oh, by the way, and just a reminder, we're reading the book, The Internet is Not the Answer by Andrew Keen. Where Facebook does differ from Google is in its almost religious insistence on the social importance of the network. Quote, Facebook is founded on a radical social premise that an inevitable enveloping transparency will overtake modern life. Facebook is founded on the inevitable enveloping transparency of modern life. You say transparency as if it's a good thing, explains Kirkpatrick. For Mark Zuckerberg, the network is defined by a collective sharing of our personal data in a brightly lit McLuhan-esquin village. McLuhan-esque village. As Kirkpatrick notes, McLuhan, quote, is a favorite at the company, unquote, because, quote, he predicted the development of a universal communications platform that would unite the planet, unquote. And I'm sure that's what Facebookers think of Facebook. They think it is a communications platform that's going to unite the planet. Zuckerberg shares McLuhan's narrative fallacy, seeing the internet, quote, as just this massive stream of information. It's almost the stream of all human consciousness and communications, and the products we build are just different views of that, unquote. One ominous 2009 Facebook project was thus the Gross Happiness Index, a classically utilitarian attempt to measure the mood of its users by analyzing the words and phrases that they published on their Facebook page. Another was the even creepier, I hate the use of the word creepy because we all, anyway. Another was the even creepier 2012 company study that altered the news feeds of 700,000 Facebook users to experiment with their mood swings. Yes, this is what Facebook is doing with you, to you, and you should not be participating. Sergey Brin's big circle of data is, for Mark Zuckerberg, the recursive loop of the social web. The more people who join Facebook, the more valuable, culturally, economically, and above all, morally, Zuckerberg believes Facebook will become to us all. He even came up with what has become known as Zuckerberg's Law, a social variation of Moore's Law, which suggests that each year our own personal data on the network will grow exponentially. Well, not if you're me, because I have pretty much almost completely stopped using social media, and I sure as hell don't put any kind of information on Facebook, the Twitter, the anything. So nope. My information on the internet is sure as fuck not growing exponentially. And I haven't done it because I'm lazy, but I'm still just looking at the LinkedIn account thinking I should delete that because it has no fucking purpose that I can discern. In 10 years' time, Zuckerberg told Kirkpatrick, quote, 1,000 times more data about Facebook users will flow through the social network. People are going to have a device with them at all times that's automatically sharing. You can predict that. Unquote. And we do. They're called smartphones. You have it with you all the time, unless you're not a loser like mine. I have a smartphone. It's somewhere in my house, and it's turned off right now. It's a disturbing prediction that I'm afraid is already being realized in Facebook's dominance of the mobile web and the development of smartphones as the ultimate surveillance machine, which will know not only exactly where we are, but also exactly what we are doing. The Facebook story is another chapter in the internet's ironic history. Mark Zuckerberg, the kid who can't communicate, has revolutionized 21st century communication by popularizing a bizarre cult of the social. He has appropriated the ideals of openness and transparency to suit Facebook's commercial interest, thereby making privacy increasingly obsolete. And making privacy obsolete, again, this is important. I talked about this at the end of the last episode. Making privacy obsolete is good for the corporations because it allows them to get the data to advertise to you, to sell your data to other corporations, to make money off of you, to manipulate you. And the making of privacy obsolete is also beneficial to the government, because it makes it easier for the government to know who is the enemy, who is dangerous, who needs to be censored, who needs to be silenced. His narrative fallacy is to believe that the network, in the form of Facebook, is uniting us as a human race. We thus almost have a moral obligation to reveal our true selves to the network, to participate in the real-time confessional of our brightly lit global village. That's why the socially autistic Zuckerberg believes that we have only, quote, one identity, unquote, telling Kirkpatrick that, quote, having two identities for yourself is an example of a lack of integrity, unquote. And this illustrates why Zuckerberg has no contact with the human species. When he talked about this and when he said, yeah, you know, people, you only have one identity. Well, no, you don't. Normal people. Autistic retards like Zuckerberg, he may only have one identity. I have an identity when I'm at work. I have an identity when I'm hitting on a girl. I have an identity when I'm hanging out with my friends. I have an identity when I'm with my family. I have an identity when I'm doing this podcast. And while they are all aspects of the me, who the Buddhist claim doesn't exist, I've been reading some Buddhist stuff lately, so it just popped into my head. But no, these are all images of me, but they are different identities. And this is what I say to you people. And those of you who think that the way I talk on this podcast is the way I behave every moment of my life, it's not. This is the persona. This is what I bring to the cast. This is the entertainment. The information is valid. The opinions I present are my opinions. The way I present them, that's the entertainment. We have different identities for different situations. Zuckerberg's inability to understand this shows him to not be as astute as he may think he is. And it's why Sheryl Sandberg, Facebook's chief operating officer, says that, quote, you can't be on Facebook without being your authentic self, unquote. Well, of course you can, because a lot of Facebook accounts are just fake accounts set up by people in third world countries via Fiverr to do things like get followers for pages. There's fake accounts on Facebook put there by Anonymous and by the guys from 4chan for trolling purposes and hacking purposes. And then there's people, there's people like me. I have a Facebook account. All the information on it is completely fucking fake. All I do is use it to just publish, auto-publish stating the obvious in the other podcast to the interwebs. It's a completely fake account in every fucking way imaginable. So you can't be on Facebook without being your authentic self. Trust me on this. But this, like so much else that Zuckerberg and Sandberg say, is entirely wrong. Having multiple identities as a citizen, a friend, a worker, a woman, a parent, an online buddy, is actually an example of someone with so much integrity that they are unable to compromise their differing social roles. And as more and more young people are recognizing, maintaining one's authenticity is in quotes, in the digital age may well mean leaving Facebook and finding a less well-lit place to hang out on the internet. Inspired by Max Weber's Protestant Ethic and the Spirit of Capitalism, the American sociologist Robert Merton popularized the idea of the unintended consequences of purposeful social action. The history of Facebook is an excellent example of Merton is a perfect I hate it when the words, you know, get to end of sentence and the word is hyphenated. And it's like, God, don't break the word up in the middle when I'm trying to fucking read out loud, because then my brain gets confused. So my brain gets confused all the fucking time anyway. The history of Facebook is an excellent example of Merton's theory. Facebook has been designed to bring us together as a happy global village. But the reverse is true. Rather than uniting us, a 2013, remember, diversity plus proximity equals war. Diversity plus proximity, everybody being on Facebook and interacting with each other on Facebook. Diversity plus proximity equals war. You heard it at Chateau Hartiz first. Rather than uniting us, a 2013 study by the University of Michigan psychologist Ethan Kross shows Facebook is making us unhappier and more envious of others. Rather than establishing trust, a 2014 Reason Roop poll of Americans found Facebook was trusted with our personal data by only 5% of the respondents. Significantly less than either the 35% of people who trusted the Internal Revenue Service or even the 18% who trusted the National Security Agency. Facebook, trusted by fewer people than the IRS and the NSA. If that's not a glowing endorsement, I don't know what is. Rather than cheering us up, a 2013 study of 600 Facebook users by the Institute of Information Systems at Berlin's Humboldt University found Facebook made more than 30% of its users feel lonelier, angrier, or more frustrated. None of this should be surprising. It's what happens when you hand over the conversation to a geek who talks like a computer. It's what happens when you trust somebody with zero empathy. Now, It's not really Mark Zuckerberg's fault that people who use Facebook become losers, become unhappier, don't trust, blah, 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 blah. Mark Zuckerberg created it, but unlike Obamacare, nobody was forced to use it. Nobody is forced to participate, unlike Obamacare. And this is why I preach the gospel of unplugging from the social media. it really is, to a large extent, just making most of you. My own mother, right? She sends me the emails. Today on Facebook, somebody was posting stuff about God, and that God is stupid, because my mother's an atheist, but she loves Muslims, right? She's an atheist, but only against, she's only atheist if there's a white Christian in the room. Muslims, she can't stop kissing their asses, right? So she'll send me emails. I'm not making this up, guys. She sends me emails. Somebody posted something about God on Facebook, and I was so angry. Somebody was posting things on Facebook about Donald Trump, and they don't realize Donald Trump is literally Hitler. I'm just thinking, how is this making your life any better? How? Turn off the fucking Facebook and go do something. I mean, look at me. How many podcasts have I come on where I say to you, well, I made the mistake of going on Facebook today and I saw this, and then I have to rant about shit that I saw on Facebook. Right? I think it's pretty safe to say, if you went back to all my podcasts for the year and counted the number of times I said that, it would be pretty safe to say that is half the times that I have been on Facebook. Last time I logged into Facebook, let me think a second. How long has it been? God, it's been at least 3 weeks since I have logged into Facebook. I can say this with 100% honesty. I probably log into Facebook maybe 2 times a month. Every once in a while, it might be a little more often if I'm trying to troubleshoot something or something like that. But I think that's about right, man. To go in there and I go on, I do something, I get the fuck out. All right, anyway. So I'm getting the fuck out. So then, remember that I told you about this guy Adam Keene, who wrote this book, hates libertarians and blames everything that's happening. All of this stuff, the Zuckerberg, right, everything he's just talking about, all of this is the fault of libertarians. Listen to this. To explain the decentralized design of the World Wide Web, Tim Berners-Lee, hyphenated last name, that's a clue, liked to compare it with the capitalist free market system. Okay, the system called the internet, which is ultimately controlled by the government, is not like capitalist free market system. The web where you have, well, anyway, I'm not, let me just move on because this is beside the point. Quote, I told people that the web was like a market economy, he wrote in his autobiography. In a market economy, anybody can trade with anybody, and they don't have to go to a market square to do it, unquote. Kind of, sort of true about the internet, but we're not going to argue that right now. Here's the point. And this is Andrew Keene writing. This is him saying this. But in today's libertarian age, the similarities between the web and capitalism are more than just architectural. In today's libertarian age, see, this is where Andrew Keene and I part ways. Today's libertarian age. Now, I don't know how Mr. Keene is defining the word libertarian, because he doesn't do that anywhere in the book. But in my world, when you live in a society where people are forced to buy health insurance from privately owned corporations, when you have a government listening to everybody's communications, monitoring all of their email, when you have government killing people with flying robots, when you have taxation and wealth redistribution and welfare and regulations designed to protect the corporations from failure, and you have corporate bailouts, you have a military-industrial complex. I'm not really sure how in the fuck that constitutes a libertarian age. This is not a libertarian age. One of the reasons why Mr. Keene can't find the way out of this fucking dungeon he's in is because he's looking for a key in the wrong place. You can sit around and spend all your life, which is what he's doing, trying to blame libertarians for the fact that Facebook sells your information to corporations. Libertarians are not the reason Facebook sells your personal information to corporations. The reason Facebook sells your personal information to corporations is because you're fucking dumb enough to give Facebook your personal information. Libertarians did not come to your house and force you to get a fucking Facebook account. Statists do come to your house and force you to buy Obamacare. Statists do come to your house, force you to pay income taxes, which are then used to bail out the banking corporations. See, the promise of the internet, a promise of the internet, in addition to everyone being able to interact with everyone, and this making the world better, because again, if you just interact with more people who are different than you, everything's going to be better. And there is the promise of making the money. Anybody can make anything and sell anything, and anybody can buy it, and that doesn't work. We can see that. It might work in a couple of cases here and there, but it does not work overall. I mean, it sounds good. I agree. It sounds great. It sounds like it should work, but it's not working. Now, maybe there's a way, and I don't know what this is. This is all coming out of my ass right now. This is not, there's no notes here. This is me talking. Maybe there's a way to attribute the failure of the internet to bring this economic prosperity to everybody on the state. Maybe there is. I don't know what it is. Right? The promise was we could all go on the internet and create stuff and sell it on the internet and we'd make money. But not that many people are making that much money selling shit on the internet. Unless, of course, they're maybe on the YouTube and they're doing the advert, right? Even the people making money, look how much money is being made by individuals on the internet via advertising as opposed to, all right, someone like Stefan Molyneux who sells, you know, he does his stuff and you can pay him. Okay, you're paying him for his podcasting and things. Or somebody like Black Dragon who has the stuff he does, the online, the podcast and the coaching sessions and shit, you pay him and he does that. So that's something he's creating. You're paying him for that. You're getting something. You know, that's not advertising. I'm not saying that this doesn't exist. The musicians who do, they put their music on the internet and people listen, come to iTunes or whatever and buy their songs. I'm not saying nobody is making money for the things they create on the internet. I'm saying nobody is making significant amounts of money. I talked about this, what, 1-2 podcasts ago, right? Show me the musicians making as much money on the internet as Pink Floyd or Led Zeppelin or the Rolling Stones got for a record deal. And maybe there's a way to attribute this failure on the part of the internet to the state. I think a big part of the reason the failure has happened, though, is because the digital medium is reproducible. The advantage of the internet is the disadvantage of the internet. The advantage of digital materials, digital information, is the disadvantage of digital information, right? If you want a book and it's only available in paper, it's like I bought, you know, you have to hunt it down. These books, one time they were published, like the book Fuck Yes. And there's this other book that I've read about it. I've read from it in the meditations. Fuck, is that book here? Where is that book? I can't remember the name of it. It's out of print now, right? So yeah, you have to go on Amazon, and I paid like $25 for a used copy or something. And it's in fairly, I mean, it's okay condition, but I had to go find this book. A physical object. And so there's a scarcity to them. They can't be easily reproduced. But with your digital technology, with your ebook, I mean, once one person buys the ebook, it can be reproduced endlessly. Once somebody downloads your song from iTunes, it can be reproduced endlessly. So the advantage of the internet, the advantages of the internet, are the disadvantages of the internet. Digital information can be easily stored, transmitted, and reproduced. It's an advantage, and it's a disadvantage. Anybody can get on the internet. It's an advantage and a disadvantage. You can encounter people who disagree with you, people you don't like. Advantage, disadvantage. You can tune out people you don't like and you don't agree with. It's an advantage, it's a disadvantage. One of the promises that was made to us, one of the forecast, the predictions that was made to us about the wonders of the internet was that the internet was going to make life better and make everybody smarter. Problem is, the internet cannot do that. The internet is merely a tool. If you give a tool to a monkey, the monkey does not become smarter and better. The monkey simply becomes a monkey with a tool. It's the person using the tool that becomes better. It's the person using the tool that becomes smarter. And to become the better and the smarter, the person has to put the effort into it. The smarter and the better doesn't just happen because the tool is there. All right, we're going to be back. Part 4, we'll talk about this some more. We've barely even, of course, gotten started. Maybe next time around, maybe I won't tangent quite so long, but maybe I will. Who knows? If you don't like it, you don't have to listen to the podcast. And remember, if you don't buy anything from Amazon affiliate, CLS.link, CLS.link, then you're stealing. You bastards. Stop stealing from the shit that I put on the internet for free. How dare you fucking take advantage of me? Fucking cisgendered scum.